Hi, Max. How are you?
Good, thank you. So I guess the first question I have is, what are the risks associated with cosmetic surgery?
Well, that's a very big question. I think I think the first thing you need to think about is that when you're contemplating cosmetic surgery, it's purely elective. So unlike other areas of medicine, it's not life-saving or necessarily going to make you better. This is something that you've thought about. That might enhance your appearance, might enhance your confidence, and there are many benefits of that. But I tend to put it in a different category altogether. Our job, I think, as plastic surgeons, is to really inform patients. Obviously, they've come in with some preconceived ideas as to what surgery is going to give them. But my role, I think, as a responsible doctor, is to spend a lot of time going through what's involved with the procedure, also what the potential risks and complications are, and what the both the pluses and the minuses are, and often leave the patient with a lot more information to then really make an informed decision.
I see.
And I think it's a good approach. It's held me in good stead now for many, many years of practice, because rather than trying to convince people to have it, in fact, most of the time I'm trying to convince people to really stop, think, and decide if they really want it or not.
I see. So your research has focused on breast implants. So why those in particular?
Yeah, so look, we've been interested in breast implant complications for many years, actually almost a decade now, which is hard to believe, isn't it? Look, it's a popular cosmetic procedure. I'm not saying it's a bad one. In fact, a lot of people get breast implants done and are very happy with them.
Sure.
But there are some medium to long-term risks and complications that we've known about for some time. The biggest reason why women present then years down the track for reoperation is a thing called contracture. And this is where everything's fine, but then after a while the implant becomes hard, painful, and actually can eventually cause some sort of visible deformity in the breast. And the contracture is now been shown through our research to be related to a very low-grade infection of the implant. Now, it's not like a rip-roaring traditional infection. These are it's almost like a film of bacteria that attach to the surface of the implant and then grow over years to cause inflammation and hardening. And the research we've done, which, of course, I'm very proud of, has not only proven that this is a problem, but has now looked to how to reduce that risk of infection. And a lot of it has focused on what happens right at the beginning when the implant goes in. So certain strategies the surgeon uses, the facilities that these implants go in terms of sterility and high standards of medical practice, and then follow-up care is actually critical in terms of reducing the risk of contracture.
Mm.
Part of this is now translated into a 14-point safety plan, which is now, I'm happy to say, being adopted all around the world. And by simply doing these steps, we can reduce the incidence of contracture by up to a factor of 10 times, which is a remarkable outcome.
That's actually very interesting.
It
but
is.
If a prosthetic implant is infected, what are the dangers to the body?
Sure. So, look, in some ways, I think, we put a lot of artificial things into human bodies as doctors these days, so hip joints, knee joints, artificial heart valves, cochlear implants, and breast implants. And what we've begun to appreciate is that whenever prosthetic surfaces go into the human body, there is a potential for contamination. Bacteria, of course, are extremely clever. They're amongst the most successful life form we have on this planet. When bacteria come into contact with these artificial surfaces, they'll be able to secrete a thick, sticky glue that binds them onto that surface. Now, having done a lot of research on infected implants over many years, I think it's probably impossible to put an implant into a patient without some form of contamination. Now, that might alarm people. But in fact, if the bacterial contamination is low, then the bacteria and the body can kind of live almost happily together. We've got a perfect example of our gut system, which is full of bacteria. They're happy bacteria, and they live, symbiotically with our human body. It's when the level of contamination becomes high, or the bacteria have some sort of advantage and start to multiply, that you start to run into problems. And so, with breast implants, the process often takes years. But once again, if you target the level of contamination and try and keep it to a minimum when these implants go in, you can then alter what happens downstream, and hopefully then improve outcomes for patients.
I see. I mean, your research describes something called anaplastic large cell lymphoma. Would you be able to describe this for us?
Of course. So in the last probably 6 or 7 years, we've had some reports of a rare type of a lymphoma. Lymphoma is a type of a cancer related to the immune cells of the body, which are the lymphocytes. Now, initially, we weren't sure like why these tumors were developing around women with breast implants, but it's become clear that it is a condition that is related to the presence of breast implants. Now, once again, I don't want people to panic because there's only about, at the moment, about 300 cases reported worldwide. So the risk is extremely low, and it happens years after these implants go in. But having done a lot of work on breast implant infection, our research group hypothesised that there might be a link between these bacteria within the human body and the stimulation of the human lymphocytes over time. And our recent paper certainly supports this theory. We took some samples of this rare tumour from all around the world, in collaborative units in the US and in Melbourne, we were able to show that these tumour samples had very, very high levels of bacteria. And it supports the theory that, in fact, these bacteria have a role to play, not only in causing contracture or hardening, but sometimes, unfortunately, they can potentially stimulate these lymphocytes over time and then transform them into a cancer.
Sure. I mean, well, I guess a final thought is, if people are concerned, what would you recommend that they do? And I guess also going forward,
how
do you think the medical community could best manage these issues to reduce the risk of anaplastic large cell lymphoma?
Sure. Look, so I think putting into perspective, I think the risk of lymphoma is small. But if, in fact, our theory holds true, which I believe it will, then it becomes even more critical that surgeons and patients are aware of the risk of infection of these implants as they go in. It points to, I think, a standard of care that and a standard of training, I guess, that when surgeons are talking to patients about these procedures, that they are confident and the patient is confident that all these steps are taken to reduce the risk of contamination. So I think going forward, we need to look very carefully at the quality of the training, the quality of the facilities, the quality of the implants, obviously, but overall a vigilance towards preventing these implants from becoming contaminated. And I think recently Minister Skinner, State Health Minister, announced going forth that breast implant procedures, amongst others, should really be done in licensed premises, and that raises the standard of safety and care. And I think anything that supports that is a really, really good thing, because essentially a lot of these procedures are unregulated and performed outside of licensed facilities. So I think there's a lot of work to do to simply raise the standard and say, look, do it in a proper facility, do it using the proper technique, use the 14-point plan to reduce infection. The second part of that, I think, is that the message needs to go out, strongly that any woman getting an implant in should have ongoing follow-up. It's not good enough to simply put an implant in and say, see you later.
Sure.
We have as now standard of care in our practice at Macquarie University that patients we put implants in are seen every year.
I see.
And they're followed up regularly. Some patients get implants quite young, and, of course, their bodies are going to change after pregnancy, childbirth, breastfeeding, eventually with age and gravity, of course, which always wins. Famous song, I think, said that. So I think for us, it's a duty of care to see these patients, regularly. Things like ALCL, of course, have popped up. And once again, the numbers are low. But if you're seeing your patient every year and something else happens that we find out about, you can inform them what to look for. Come back if you see this, this, and this. Come back anytime, in fact, if you're concerned, because, we're here to help you. I think those two points. One is make sure they're done properly and in a good licensed premises, and the second thing is to have adequate follow-up. I think if we do those things, particularly with procedures like a breast implant, which, to put into perspective, are completely elective, then I think we're doing all we can to ensure good outcomes for our patients, which at the end of the day, all doctors want, don't they?
Of course. I mean, patient care is very important.
It's the fundamental principle of medicine. Look after your patient.
Fair enough. Okay, well, thank you for your time. Your research does seem very interesting, Dr. Dever, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for taking an interest in our work.